Coming up on Harvard Chan This Week in Health, a progress report on the American diet, the life-saving improvements that have been made, and the changes that many Americans still need to make. Plus, death rates are dropping in the United States, except for people in one specific demographic, and a new warning about the dangers of some dietary supplements and how one state may soon be taking action. Hello and welcome to Harvard Chan This Week in Health. I'm Noah Levitt.
And I'm Amy Montemuro. Noah, we'll begin this week with a progress report on the state of the American diet. A new study released this week from the Harvard Chan School found that better eating habits in the U.S. prevented 1 million premature deaths over a 14-year period. But despite those improvements, researchers say the overall American diet remains poor.
And for this study, Amy, scientists examined the diets of more than 30,000 U.S. adults from 1999 to 2012, and then assessed the quality of those diets using a measure called the Alternate Healthy Eating Index. So here are the results. Differences in eating habits resulted in 12% fewer cases of type 2 diabetes, 8% fewer cases of heart disease, and 1% fewer cases of cancer. Despite steady improvement, the study participants' average healthy eating score on a scale ranging from 0 to 110, with 110 being the healthiest, never reached 50.
The study's author, Don Wang, a doctoral candidate at the Harvard Chan School, says that the small change in diet can have a significant effect on health. These changes could include eating more fruits and vegetables or reducing sodium intake.
The fruits and vegetables consumption is still not very high, so that means we still have to encourage people to eat more fresh, wholesome foods. And for sodium, it's very concerning. The sodium consumption has been increasing over the 14 years.
A separate study released by the Harvard Chan School this week identified the most cost-effective interventions for preventing childhood obesity. Researchers found that an excise tax on sugar-sweetened beverages, elimination of the tax subsidy for advertising unhealthy foods to children, and nutrition standards for food and drink sold in schools outside of school meals could prevent 1 million cases of childhood obesity by 2025. According to the study, all three would more than pay for themselves by reducing healthcare costs related to obesity.
Overall, death rates in the United States are dropping, except among middle-aged white Americans who are not college-educated. According to the New York Times, two Princeton economists analyzed health and mortality data from the Centers for Disease Control and found that the mortality rate for whites 45 to 54 years old with no more than a high school education increased by 134 deaths per 100,000 people from 1999 to 2014. The study showed that the increasing death rate was driven by a rising number of suicides and the negative effects of substance abuse, as well as overdoses of heroin and prescription opioids. Researchers couldn't identify a particular cause for these increases, but suggested that racial differences in the way that painkillers are prescribed or stress related to the Great Recession could be factors. The death rates for middle-aged blacks and Hispanics continued to drop during the same period. Although middle-aged blacks still have a higher mortality rate than whites, 581 deaths per 100,000 people, compared with 415 for whites, the rate for middle-aged Hispanics is far lower, 262 deaths per 100,000 people. That's disappointing news, but overall death rates in the U.S. have been dropping consistently since the late 1960s and early 1970s. Gadara Zdanayi, assistant professor of global health at the Harvard Chan School, says the main reason is a reduction in deaths from chronic conditions.
The death rates from coronary heart disease have been slashed by almost a half, and from stroke by more than two-thirds. So overall, these two are the two leading causes of death in the U.S. The sort of general consensus is that about half or slightly more than half of this reduction is due to reduction in important risk factors. That's smoking, blood pressure, and also cholesterol levels. The rest is improvement in treatments.
This week, Chipotle has closed dozens of restaurants across the Pacific Northwest amid a growing E. coli outbreak. 37 people have now been sickened after eating at the chain of Mexican restaurants. Officials from the Food and Drug Administration, as well as the Centers for Disease Control, are now trying to find the food source of the bacteria. According to the Associated Press, health officials believe the bacteria will be found on fresh produce such as lettuce, tomatoes, cilantro, or onions, or possibly spices. Chipotle is currently cleaning its restaurants across the Northwest, checking its supply chain, and buying new food. The company says it will reopen once officials say it is safe. A new federal report out this week is raising concerns about dietary supplements, products such as weight loss pills or multivitamins, and use of these products among members of the military and young athletes. A series of studies in the journal Drug Testing and Analysis found that 3/4 of all military personnel use dietary supplements each month. Researchers are also worried that young athletes could be ingesting unsafe levels of caffeine.
And Amy, this is concerning because these supplements, products such as weight loss pills or multivitamins, are largely unregulated. Under a 1994 law, the Food and Drug Administration cannot review dietary supplements for safety or efficacy before they go to market. They can only intervene when negative effects from a supplement are reported.
But Massachusetts may soon be taking action. Legislators are now considering a bill that would make this state the first to ban the sale of weight loss and muscle building supplements to people under the age of 18. Bryn Austin, director of the Harvard Chan School's Strategic Training Initiative for the Prevention of Eating Disorders, also known as STRIPED, spearheaded the effort.
Our bill will also move these products behind the counter. So any consumer age 18 or older will need to talk to a pharmacist or talk to the store manager or somebody else in order to get access to these products. And we're hoping that that additional barrier may give people some pause. Consumers really need to know that dietary supplements are not pre-screened for safety or efficacy. You should not be using these products. None of the products claiming that they provide healthy weight loss or healthy weight muscle building or so-called sexual enhancement, none of these products should be used.
Another study released earlier this year found that at least 23,000 emergency room visits in the U.S. each year can be traced to supplements. Patients in these cases report symptoms of heart palpitations or allergic reactions.
Pediatricians across the U.S. are taking action against parents who don't vaccinate their children. A new survey from Children's Hospital in Denver finds that 1 in 5 pediatricians regularly drops families who refuse to have their children vaccinated. Now, it is rare for parents to refuse vaccinations. 83% of doctors reported that 1% or fewer parents refuse infant vaccines in a typical month. But when parents do refuse to vaccinate, researchers say that doctors in the South and Northeast are most likely to drop their kids as patients. But it's also been happening more frequently in California after that state's measles outbreak. Both the American Academy of Pediatrics and the CDC discourage this practice, instead urging doctors to build relationships with parents, which could help convince those parents that childhood vaccinations are safe and necessary. Finally, this episode, Amy, how do you schedule an appointment with your doctor?
Ah, yes, the old school phone call / scheduling in person has been my go-to, but I got to tell you, it's a little different than what I'm used to with everyday communication.
And I'm always on my phone, I'm emailing, everyone's always accessible, but new survey finding that's not the case with doctor's offices.
That's right. The survey finds that there's a big gap between the technology we use every day, such as this emailing and texting we're talking about, and the technology that doctors use to communicate with their patients. According to the Washington Post, the research from Nielsen shows that just 21% of Americans have access to online appointment scheduling with their doctors, 15% use email, and only 9% receive reminders via text.
And according to the survey, people want these services. For example, 36% want online appointment scheduling, and 34% want an online portal to access test results. The research was commissioned by the Council of Accountable Physician Practices, which is a nonprofit coalition of 24 medical and health systems. The council says that a main barrier to this could be complexity, since these systems would need to be linked electronically with diagnostic labs, pharmacies, and other physician practices. So we may have to wait a little while before, you know, we can text for an appointment with our doctor, but maybe in the near future it could happen.
So we should have patience. That's what you're saying.
Yes.
I'm trying.
And we're ending on a pun. This is a good thing.
So that's all for this edition of Harvard Chan This Week in Health, a production of the Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health.
And you can listen to this podcast anytime and stay up to date on the latest health news by visiting our website, hsph.harvard.edu.